The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include: NC House budget plan includes tax cuts and raises for teachers, and rising coffee prices unlikely to hurt consumption much. And we'll begin with NC House budget plan includes tax cuts and raises for teachers. The proposed House budget has an average of 5.5% raises for North Carolina teachers and raises for other state employees that are higher than those in the Senate version of the state budget. Raises and tax cuts were announced by the House on Monday ahead of the full budget being made publicly available. The $25.7 billion budget will also include money for broadband expansion, infrastructure, capital projects, and other plans, Republican lawmakers said during a news conference Monday. Legislative budget summer is in the House phase now, and the chamber doesn't want to cut taxes as much as the Senate does. But House budget writers said Monday during a news conference they have the same priority as the Senate, just not on the same timeline for lowering taxes. The House also wants to give bigger raises to teachers and other state employees than the Senate. Both chambers are Republican-controlled. The Senate passed its proposed state budget in June, and now the budget is in the House's camp. Raises for NC teachers, school bus drivers, state employees, and more. The proposed House budget would give teachers raises of an average of about 4% the first year, 5.5% combined over 2 years, and the House proposal emphasizes raises for veteran teachers. Under the House budget, state employees would get 2.5% raises each of the next 2 years, equaling a 5% raise over 2 years. That includes university employees, except for those faculty who are exempt. The Senate's proposal was a 3% across-the-board raise for most state employees. Representative Jeffrey Elmore, a North Wilkesboro Republican, said their goal was to look at areas that had problems with retention and recruitment, as well as give back to workers who were on the front lines in the depths of the pandemic. State employees and local education workers employed during the heart of pandemic would all receive $500 bonuses using federal American Rescue Plan funds, he said. Elmore said the House budget targets younger teachers through benefits by restoring master's degree pay and implementing 8 weeks of paid parental leave for new mothers. Also, because testing data this past school year was sporadic, instead of testing bonuses, the budget proposes using those funds to give all teachers $300 bonuses. Non-certified school personnel in K-12 schools and community colleges would also have their salary floor raised to $15 an hour over the next 2 years, Elmore said. That includes custodians and bus drivers who would receive raises to $13 an hour the first year and then to $15 the second year. Retired state employees won't get cost of living adjustments in the House proposal, but they would get bonuses of 2% each of the next 2 years, totaling 4%. Individual and corporate tax cuts. The House budget began rolling out in segments, and its tax plan was revealed in committee on Monday afternoon before the full budget became public. The House wants to reduce the corporate income tax as the Senate does, but does not propose phasing it out to zero like the Senate wants. The House's budget proposal does call for reducing the standard income tax deduction rate. In short, both chambers want to cut your taxes and corporate income taxes, but don't agree on the amount. The House's budget proposes the individual income tax rate would be reduced from the current rate of 5.25% to 4.99%. That is less of a reduction than the Senate, which calls for 3.99%. The House's standard deduction amount would increase from the current amount of $21,500 to $25,500 for married couples filing jointly. For single taxpayers, the standard deduction would increase from $10,750 to $12,750. If the House budget were to become law, it would start with the January 1st, 2022 tax year. Representative John Zoka said the House plan to lower the corporate income tax from the current 2.5% rate to 1.99% over 2 years would give North Carolina the lowest corporate income tax rate in the Southeast. He said the state competes regionally more than across the country for companies to come here. This is one reason I believe they continue to come here is because we have an inviting corporate tax environment for companies, Zoka said during the House Finance Committee meeting on Monday afternoon. The full budget document will be released publicly by Tuesday morning ahead of the House Appropriations Committee meeting. The House expects to pass its budget before the end of the week. Then both chambers must pass a compromise budget that they will then send to Democratic Governor Roy Cooper to sign or veto. The Democratic response. House Democratic leader Robert Reeves of Chatham County said the Republican-written House budget does not reach the full potential of what North Carolinians deserve. Reeves also criticized the tax cuts for businesses and said in a statement that we should be using this once-in-a-lifetime financial opportunity to build a North Carolina that works better for everyone. The state has a huge budget surplus of an estimated $6.5 billion. Reeves called the House budget proposal just the beginning of the process, and I look forward to working with all stakeholders, including Governor Cooper, to craft a budget that truly reflects the needs of our state. The North Carolina Democratic Party shared Reeves' sentiment. Next, rising coffee prices unlikely to hurt consumption much. The price of a cup of coffee keeps rising, and nobody seems to care. Prices for Arabica beans are up 50% in the past 12 months, hitting 7-year highs in July after drought and frost damaged crops in top producer Brazil and signaled tight world supplies for at least 2 years. High freight costs and shipping container shortages continue to rattle global supply chains, squeezing margins and heightening inflation fears. Many consumer-facing businesses face a stark choice, raise prices, or switch to cheaper beans. The good news, coffee drinkers are so addicted that consumption is unlikely to be hurt much, especially with demand still recovering from the pandemic. The drink is such a key part of consumers' daily routines, it would take a lot to change their coffee habits, said Darren Seifer, food and beverage industry analyst at research firm NPD Group. Customers are accustomed to volatile prices, he added. This year, global coffee consumption is expected to rise to 168.8 million 60-kilogram bags, according to a Rabobank International from 164.8 million bags in the previous period. The world market is expected to expand at a compound annual rate of 9% over the next 3 years to well over $400 billion, Starbucks said. In Asia, the fastest-growing coffee market, consumption will rise thanks to bigger incomes and a burgeoning cafe culture in China, India, and Indonesia, according to Fitch Solutions. Demand for coffee is not completely unshakable. The pandemic brought the first dip since 2011. But while higher prices this year may curb the post-pandemic rebound, consumption won't decrease, Rabobank analyst Guilherme Mora said. Prices would have to climb above $4 a pound to start making a dent in consumption, according to Sterling Smith, Director of Agricultural Research at AgriSampo North America. Until then, price-sensitive consumers may seek out cheaper cafes or make more coffee at home, he said. The impact will differ by region, said Venusia Nogueira, Director of the Brazilian Specialty Coffee Association. Consumers in producing nations like hers tend to be more price sensitive, she said. While coffee drinkers in wealthier places like Europe and the U.S. are less affected. There's already a switch towards cheaper Robusta beans in Brazil, according to Rabobank. For companies like Starbucks, coffee beans represent a small part of overall cost compared with labor and rent. Still, the world's largest cafe chain says it is feeling inflationary pressures. Pricing will be one of many levers that we use to offset these headwinds, the company said, as well as encouraging consumers to buy more expensive items like food and cold drinks. Nestle CEO Mark Schneider said premiumization and the higher price point give the makers of Nespresso and Nescafe options. Where appropriate, we'll raise prices, he said. Some businesses may try tactics such as fewer free refills or reducing the weight of packages without changing prices, said Judy Gaines, president of J. Gaines Consulting. For smaller coffee shops, charging more may be easier than altering the taste of loyal visitors' daily cup. Some of our customers have been drinking our blends for many, many years. If we change them, they'll notice it, said Marissa Crochetta, manager at London's Algerian Coffee Stores, which has been selling coffee since 1887. If raw coffee prices go up dramatically with all the other costs, then we'll have to increase our prices. Next, no one thought farmers could work together. Then came Land of Lakes. In June of 1921, 350 farmers meeting in St. Paul voted unanimously to form a dairy cooperative. The name Land O'Lakes didn't come along for a few more years, but a quintessential Minnesota brand had been born. 100 years later, what started as the Minnesota Cooperative Creameries Association has grown to a $14 billion a year business in dairy, animal feed, and seed and crop products. Now headquartered in Arden Hills, Land O'Lakes sits at number 219 on the Fortune 500. With nearly 2,500 dairy and ag producers and nearly 1,000 smaller co-ops and independent retailers as members and a worldwide customer base. That cooperative model is our very foundation. The fact that we are owned by our farmer members, by our local retail network, I think it's so powerful, Land O'Lakes President and CEO Beth Ford said in an interview last week on the Arden Hills campus. Its low brick buildings were mostly empty of people, with most of the headquarters workforce working from home. To kick off the celebration of the company's centennial, Ford is holding an employee town hall on Wednesday and dedicating a new bronze sculpture of a farmer on the headquarters campus. That aligns with the company's recent moves to refocus its public image on its farmer members. Last year, Land O'Lakes quietly removed the image of a Native American woman that graced its dairy products for decades and elevated the term farmer-owned on its packaging. The company will also release its mid-year earnings on Wednesday at a time of booming profits for U.S. corporations. Ford said it will be another solid showing following a strong performance in 2020, fueled by a pandemic-driven surge in butter sales and animal feeds. The numbers will look really good, Ford said. We've had a good top-line growth, and we've pulled that to the bottom line, and the bottom line looks really good. Ford issued a few cautions for the remainder of the year. Sales comparisons are unlikely to measure up to the third quarter of last year, when butter sales shot up as consumers settled in at home for the worst of the pandemic. Inflation also is driving up production costs, Ford said, especially in transportation and warehousing. Consumers are seeing price increases because of that, but the company is keeping close tabs on price sensitivity. Ford is also celebrating an anniversary. She took over the top job at Land O'Lakes on August 1, 2018, after a decade with the company in several management positions. The first openly gay woman to serve as a Fortune 500 CEO, Ford has emerged as a high-profile voice for the company, appearing on 60 Minutes and in the New York Times and other national publications. Ford has used that platform to call for new investments in rural America, especially emphasizing the need for better broadband connectivity, but also pointing to lack of housing options, fewer health care choices, and other factors. The pandemic made those needs more apparent than ever, she said. Over 90% of farms are still family-owned, so you have families trying to raise their children and have a life there, Ford said. It's hard to do that when you feel that your community is deteriorating. Land O'Lakes has tried to set an example by establishing what it calls the American Connection Project, in which it partners companies and have turned on public Wi-Fi at nearly 3,000 co-op locations in 49 states. Ford said she's been encouraged by signs that federal money to improve rural broadband linkages is likely to be part of an infrastructure package advancing in Congress. The project is also funding 50 fellowships for young people interested in moving to rural communities and working on improving local connectivity. We want them to go back and take the baton. Now that we've got the funding, what do we do next? Ford said. Decades of growing financial success at Land O'Lakes are in contrast to the long-standing struggles of individual dairy farmers in a contracting market. In 1996, Land O'Lakes marked its 75th anniversary with $3.5 billion in sales, which now represents a mere quarter of last year's receipts. Its $119 million in profit have more than doubled since then. An analysis by U.S. Farm Bureau economist Michael Neveu highlighted a steep fall in the number of licensed dairy operations in the U.S. Since 2003, when the U.S. Department of Agriculture first started compiling data, the total number declined from 70,735 to 31,657. The number of dairy farms dropped by 2,550 in 2020 and 3,261 in 2019. That's a real tension. It's a consolidating marketplace, Ford said, adding that it has been accelerating, especially in Wisconsin and in other areas. Land O'Lakes works to help small dairy farmers by pushing for policies that help small producers survive and advises farmers on ways to cope with market forces and manage risk, Ford said. But in the end, what we want to do is drive that profitability for the portfolio that allows us to have that profit go back to that dairy farmer. The small group of dairy producers who embarked on the cooperative in 1921 faced widespread skepticism that individualistic farmers were capable of looking past their own bottom line and functioning as a true cooperative, according to a history of Land O'Lakes published in 1998 by the International Directory of Company Histories. But the following year, Congress passed a law allowing cooperative agencies to market farm products, and the first year's return showed a slender profit, according to the published history. The young cooperative pioneered the production and sale of sweet cream butter made from cream before it turned sour rather than after, which cost more to make but was a hit with the public. In early 1924, the cooperative launched a contest in which the public was asked to suggest a product name that was catchier than Minnesota Cooperative Creamery's butter. Two people separately suggested Land O'Lakes and split the first prize, $500 in gold. The butter, conveniently packaged in quarter-pound sticks, became such a success with consumers that by 1926, the company itself adopted the same name. Next, wake home prices see months-long increase, going back to before the pandemic. Since the beginning of the year, the median real estate sale price has gone up every month in Wake County, according to a report from the County Register of Deeds. June's median sale price, the latest available, was $383,000, an increase of $9,000 from May. It's an increase from the $328,750 reported in January. In January 2020, before the COVID-19 pandemic started, the median price was $302,000. Changes in median prices tend to be caused by sales valued at $1 million or less, which the Wake County Register of Deeds calls the core market. Larger transactions outside of that core market have little effect on median prices. In June, over 95% of sales were $1 million or less. Why are home prices increasing? The increases in home prices are due to multiple factors, said Roberto Quercia, a professor who studies low-income home ownership at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill's Department of City and Regional Planning. He said the region's limited housing supply, low interest rates, increasing demand for mortgages, and the high cost of lumber have contributed to increasing home prices over the last several months. This is kind of the perfect storm, Quercia said. And while he thinks the pace of growth will slow as interest rates eventually increase, companies like Apple and Google coming to the area will keep home prices higher than they were before the pandemic, he said. I don't see this as a bubble, Quercia said. Effect on low-income families. Quirós has said many low-income families will continue to be forced to move farther outside of Raleigh. Unfortunately for families, especially ones you would consider blue-collar, our essential workers, the future is no longer commutes. Excuse me, the future is longer commutes, he said. Quirós said these families are also increasingly cut off from one of the most important aspects of wealth building, buying a home and building equity as the mortgage is paid down and the value of the property increases. The more you delay that, the less wealth building is likely to happen, he said. Quirós said, as more people with higher incomes come to work at Google or Apple, where the average position is expected to pay $187,000 annually, it will drive up housing costs. The reason why that creates challenges for affordable housing is that low-income families now are competing with the others for housing, he said. Higher purchasing power is capitalized into higher prices. What's the solution? Quirós said local governments play a crucial role in offsetting increasing housing costs. Over the last year, Wake County and the City of Raleigh have introduced many measures to promote affordable housing. In April, Wake County approved $10.3 million for future affordable housing developments, the News and Observer reported. The city committed funding in May to two affordable housing developments along future bus rapid transit lines. Last month, the City Council approved residential rezoning measures that allows duplexes and townhomes to be built in traditionally single-family neighborhoods, something Quirós said would, in theory, increase affordability because it allows for more supply on the market. Raleigh voters passed an $80 million housing bond last November that helps build and repair homes and offers first-time home buyers financial help. There continues to be a menu of solutions, Quirós said, but there is no silver bullet. I do believe there is more that should be done. Quirós said Wake County and the surrounding region will continue to attract people due to its universities' relatively lower housing costs for retirees moving from other areas and its general economic growth. But that growth doesn't benefit everyone equally, he said. Unless we do something, I think our area is going to become an expensive area like we typically associate with Silicon Valley, Quirós said. As we should celebrate economic development successes, we need to look at the distributional impact of those successes on those that are below the end of the income distribution. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.